Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Tonight is Sweet Discussions, and I am Sweet Pea. We are all poetry. Inside All Poetry, this particular show is sponsored with Team of Voices. I want to thank Kevin, who is the creator of All Poetry, and of course, Deb, the illustrious leader here at Team of Voices. Tonight, we are talking with the King. We're about the King of Horror, the almighty Stephen King, and we're going to have poems and poetry and all kinds of discussions about his quotes and any of his movies, books, or anything you might want to say about him. Right at the moment in my studio, I have Mr. Rack and Taurus. Hey, hello, Rack. How are you?
Hello, Rack. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm glad you can let everybody know that you're wonderful and great and always here with me. I really appreciate that. And then I believe I have Mr. A.P. Taylor coming online. No.
Hello. I don't sound like A.P., although I tried.
I corrected myself, though, right away.
No.
No, wait a minute.
No, it's too late.
No, I did.
Even
before I
said
hello. No. I corrected myself before I even said hello to you. I said, nope. This is Sky. I corrected myself. See, because
go back
I can't hold
back.
You and his number.
She did.
So I did
back.
Correct
she did.
Myself. I'm so proud of myself because I corrected myself. I'm very, very happy about that. And then I have the wonderful Sky because she's also always with me, and I can't say how much I appreciate her for that. So how is everyone's week going? I'm very excited because my vacation is like in 7-8 days. I'm very, very happy. I'm going to Gettysburg and Washington, D.C. And it's going to be very exciting. But tonight we're focusing on King, the mighty Stephen King. I'm really, really happy about that. Aren't you guys happy about this tonight? It's going to be a great discussion.
I'm happy. I'm eating a creamsicle, and I was a day early for an appointment. And I'm here talking about Stephen King, whom I absolutely love. So, and I'm with some wonderful company, so I'm happy.
Awesome. All right, so I'm going to go quickly, and we're just going to go through some of the little lovely things that I came up with. First off, one thing I learned that I did not know is that Stephen King wrote children's books under a different name, and I did not know that. FYI.
I'm trying to remember the pen names that he used to write under.
I did not know. I knew Crenshaw. I knew a couple of those. But I did not know he had some children's poems under a different name. So I was like, what? How did that happen? And when did that happen? Yeah, I was a little like, what? Now, I could be completely wrong because, you know, so he did a work of poems supposedly called The Bone Church. It was released in 2015, which I have not read. So I want to know if either one of you have read that.
No, I'm not familiar with that work.
I have not.
See, so this is new. So I have not read The Bone Church. It is supposedly a narrative poem published in 2009, first issued in Playboy. So that should be interesting.
Makes me think of the catacombs and the Vatican.
Right.
Pen names up there, my friend.
Oh. Or his children's books. I lost it, and I had it in my notes, and now I can't find my notes. No, that's Bachman.
On the board.
He actually did. Yeah, it was Bachman I knew. And I'm looking for a specific thing he did. Lunch at the Gotham Cafe, blah, blah, blah. John Swift.
He was prolific.
Charlie the Chicken. Burl Ivins, B-E-R-Y-L, is also Stephen King. So, Burl Ivins. That's one of his pen names. And one more to give you if I can find my other note. And I wanted to
We're losing you, sweetie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I there? My phone's hanging out. Okay. So when did Stephen King use the name John Swithin? Okay. King used the short story's fifth quarter was published under the pseudonym John Swithin. John Swithin. So that is something I did not know. In 1972, 2 years before the publication of Carrie. Okay? So that's one of his. And then what is the other one? Blah, blah, blah. And I think that's it because the other one, I can't really – a new children's book by Stephen King will haunt your walking dreams. We're never taking Amtrak again. The cover of the picture book Charlie and the Chew by Burl Evans, illustrated by Ned Turner, is displayed with a golden bird from the horror great Stephen King. If I were to ever write a children's book, it would just be just like that. So, the picture by Stephen King will haunt your dreams. The cover of the picture, which I see, this one is where I get confused on. So, you guys got to help me with this one. All right? So, I'm still trying to figure out if he wrote the book or if he didn't write the book. So, I'm putting you on this one, my girl. I'm going to put this on the board, and you need to see what truth lies in this, or if this is internet hooligans for me. Okay, Miss Sky?
What?
The Dark Tower?
I put information. No.
Yeah.
No, the one I just
put
up. Are we not getting... No, what I just put up. Did that go on the board or not?
I saw something about the Dark Tower come up.
No, it said he's just saying that he wrote that as well. He just used different pseudonyms. A lot of authors do that. Like I don't know if you've ever heard of Nora Roberts, but she writes a lot of romance.
Right.
And okay. But when she writes, she has a whole like mystery murder series. She goes under J.D. Robb. So I used to work for a book liaison company. So I never read Nora Roberts, but I know a lot about authors' names because I had to be part of the ordering and all that stuff like that. And a lot of authors do that. I think that
right.
When I publish underneath, if I were to publish, well, it's kind of weird because you have to get all kind of publishing rights when you use a pseudonym or when you use an alias. Like that, you have to get rights for that name, and then they go up like in 60 years the copyright. You have to get the copyright for the name. So I don't know, but I do know a lot of people that writers that do. Like I would be very inclined to use a different name for my children's books, only because my adult poetry can be quite dark, but I also write children's books, so. I would be inclined, just as Stephen King was, to use two different names. But again, if you use that name, you have to copyright it. Like, you just can't copyright under whatever name you want. You have to copyright.
Okay, so
it has to be, just like if you use, like, a logo, you got to copyright your logo. You got to copy out your business name. You got to take ownership of it so you can take the royalties of it. So, but a lot of people do that.
Okay, so this is what I put up here, is these two books under names I did not know he wrote about, but I don't know if they're true or if they're internet hoo-hoo. So I'm giving you, Miss Sky, my woman who knows all facts, to find out if they're truth or fiction.
I don't know if they're all facts, but I do know that he writes underneath a pseudonym name. I've never read his children's stuff, but I do know that he is underneath a different name. So I wouldn't doubt that it's that name. Because I do know that he does write underneath a pseudonym name for children's books. So I confirm that's likely true. But I've never read them.
Wow. I guess this is from the Dark Tower. So this is a children's book derived from the Dark Tower series. That's crazy.
No, I think that's just saying he also writes that.
No, I'm looking at the book. Charlie the Choo-Choo it tells the story of Charlie the Choo-Choo and Engineer Bob, and it's somehow derived from the something about the Dark Tower.
The Dark Tower series.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, now that we've learned more about Stephen King than I knew when I first started coming in here. There we go. Well, anyway, I'm always glad to have more facts that can come in. And his book of poetry called The Bone Fridge. So there we go. Those are three things I didn't know about Stephen King when I started doing my show or looking into my show. So now I'm glad that I could help educate people that probably knew all about it and are listening and going, you idiot? What do you mean you didn't know that? Which, you know.
I
but
think
I,
there are many people
anyway.
That know that he has an alternative pen name. Like, I knew he did, but I guess I never really looked into
well,
it. So
I
guess you can't call
Bachman,
a true fan.
I know he had. I know, and I know that you know he. I know they get Bachman, obviously, and I know that like I know some of the things he writes under, like Crenshaw and all of them. Like Richard Crenshaw is one of my favorite characters because he does a lot of quotes and or like quote things, and like The Green Mile. I like a lot of quotes out of that book. So, like, his different characters, I like a lot of quotes they do. So, but even though they're not, quote-unquote, pen names, he does a lot of first-person writing or narrative writing. So sometimes I think of them as, like, him as characters, which is a totally different perspective, but you know what I'm saying. At least you and Rack know what I'm saying. The rest of the world may not, but... I sometimes...
No,
like
I haven't read the Dark Tower.
Really, the Dark Tower?
Did I hit Deb last?
I mean, the Dark... Yeah, I've never read the Dark Tower series.
I've
oh, my God, that
books,
was...
I've not finished yet.
I heard them on audio, and I got a kick out of the Lobstrosities. That's just... If it stuck with me. And the noise that they made. Get a chick, got a chick. I don't know where the hell he got that from, but it was just so absurd. It stuck with me.
I did hear that he tied in into the Dark series all his other books, but he often does that with many of his books. Like,
oh,
multiple of his books mention Shawshank, like that, just in passing. Like, they just talk about Shawshank as if it were. So, I wouldn't doubt it, because he does that several times in several books.
He does. You'll be reading it, you'll be, and you're like, wait, what? Oh yeah, that's there. Or he'll mention an address or a street or a character, or and you're like, oh, wait, oh, yeah. And if you're an avid reader of him, you'll really understand those details. Or if you're not, you'll think, you're like, wait, and you'll be talking about a book with someone, and they'll be like, oh, well, that's in that book, and then you have to go and read that book. And it's like talking to Sky, reading a Stephen King book, because Sky will be like, oh, well, then now you have to go read that book and that book and that book. So it's kind of fun.
I will admit, I do have to say that they are remaking a lot of Stephen King films, and I'm rather excited, because though the originals were good, and sometimes I don't like, a lot of the time I don't like people touching originals, I think that they redo his enough justice in certain films. So I will be excited to see them. Like, they're redoing
beautiful
things. And Hateful Things was, they took out so much of that book and was really unnecessary. I think they did, of course I read the book before I seen the film, but still, I was just not very impressed. I think that the book, and the book's always better, but I mean, they could have done better. Like, they did great with The Green Mile. They did great with Shawshank Redemption. There were some really greats that they did, and I think that, I mean, the original, it was brilliant, but the remake is a lot more accurate, point blank. So, I mean, I know you can't put everything in there, because he goes into quite a lot of detail.
I think he's got a contract with Audible to read his books. So if you check and see who read the book on Audible, it could be him.
Oh. Nice.
Who read what book?
Stephen King has a contract with Audible that he reads his own work. He reads his books. So if you from Audible, that's what I was made to understand. I could be wrong, but
I know you're right, because I seen a an ad of Stephen King recently on YouTube that was promoting Audible and promoting storytelling and consuming books during audio. So I know you're right, but I was just thinking, is he going to redo the ones that were already redone by other people?
Oh, because if he is, I'm buying every book that's out there because I want to hear him read his own books.
Well, some of them did a really good job. The guy who did The Green Mile, that was my teenage. I know this sounds a really awkward book to fall asleep to, but I listened to The Green Mile like as a teenager to go to sleep at night. I listened to it every night. I don't know. I know that sounds like a really weird book, but I loved the book, and I had it on audio and in a CD version, and I would go to. So they, I mean, not to say that he wouldn't do a good job, because it's his writing, obviously, but other people did do quite a good job, too. Like, Lemony Snicket, the series of unfortunate events, Tim Curry did, like, the first, and I love Tim Curry, and he did so well.
Yeah.
And then I think it was by the fourth or the fifth book, I can't remember which one exactly, but Lemony Snicket started reading his own books. And I loved that it was in the author's voice, but I missed Tim Curry, and I was my soul was torn on which one I liked better, because Tim Curry actually did the cough, like he did the theatrics, and I really enjoyed that, and I really loved Tim Curry. But then there's also the they should just do them both, you know. So I like that. I'm gonna have to look into that. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, so what I'm going to do right now, because, you know, this is what we're here for, I am going to put up Naomi's poem. So let's do that. We're going to do a couple of our science sound clouds. And then we can.
So while you're looking for that, sweet, I just want to tell you, I brought you a poem related to the quotes, not related to King poems, although I do have a lot of King poems, but you read them all.
Okay.
So if you want me to bring a Stephen King-related book poem, I can, but for now I just have the one that it goes to a quote. I fit it to one of the quotes that you had. Because you didn't necessarily have a quote. You had a quote. No, I meant if you want that one.
It depends, though. We'll roll with it. All right, so this is Naomi's poem. You don't know how to be cheerful like before. It's the circus has left, but you could not follow it. Come on over, babe. I will open my arms to you. Not the kind of the fool that laughter, but maybe together we'll find joy. Come on over, babe. He can't bite into the life that takes you regardless of life, that bites you every day. If you can't explain, it throws at you. Come on over, babe, I'll be in my yard. I can't hear, oh, I can't fight. But maybe together we'll find the truth. Oh, babe. Don't forget that it's the drops of water that feed the hollow of the streams. If the streams can find the sea, maybe we'll find a light. you want to know the path to follow, if you want to understand what you're going for, to see your boat drifting, come on over, babe. I'll have some rum for you. I'm not a sailor, I live far from the shore, but maybe together we will find a way here. Oh, baby, if you wonder about the secret of things, you don't know what to think about the unknown. If the questions you ask are not answered, come on over, babe. I will listen to you, this truth escapes me. I don't know much about it, but maybe together we will find an answer. Oh, babe, don't forget that it is drops of water deep the hollow of the stream. If the seas can find the sea, maybe we'll find a light. Sorry about that, guys. Wow, what a beautiful voice to begin with. Let's start there. I could never sing that long, let alone hold a tune. But the words, oh, wow. Don't forget that it's the drops of water that feed the hollow of the stream. If the streams can find the sea, maybe we'll find the light. I love that stanza. If the questions you ask are not answered, come on over, babe. I just think this is such a beautiful poem. Just the ability to seek and find and seek and find and seek and find. Just so that you always know I'm always going to be over, I'm always going to be here. You're always going to find a way. So I thought that was really, really pretty. And, you know, no matter what, if I have somebody on the other side or somebody to be there for you, I thought it was really, really pretty, Naomi. And, you know, that's definitely something that everybody needs, is to be able to find somebody there, somebody on the other side, somebody that can help them. And I love all of the standards that put them there, you know, wherever you're drifting, wherever you're not being. And it definitely reminds me of Stand By Me, with Stephen King's famous, you know, always be there for you. Rackentor, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like you said, it was beautiful, and her voice was a little haunting, I thought. So the idea, the thoughts that she was putting forth, I guess, I won't say misleading, but, you know, for me, after a few minutes of it, it was almost like finishing the thought. You want to say, come on to the other side, you know, it's almost like, you know, a siren song of death luring you to the other side. You know, if you want to be loved or accepted or whatever, it is, yeah, come on over. And you'll find it all here. I mean, you could be religious about it and say, you know, in God's bosom or however you want to put that, or you could be, you know, I don't know. It's romanticized in a lot of ways. It's deep. Something that, you know, I could sit here and try and pick apart, but I doubt I'll get anywhere close to what she was trying to say. It was beautiful.
Yes. And, Sky, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought, well, one, it's brave to come on and sing. I think it takes a lot of guts to put yourself out there like that, so props to you. Excellent SoundCloud. And I think you know, I love music. I really love music. I'm a big fan of film scores. I think everybody knows that. But I also love lyrics and music in general. And I think that stems originally from a love of words and a love of poetry. Because some of my favorite singers write their own material. All I can think of right now is Meat Loaf. I love Meat Loaf. And if you take a Meat Loaf song and you break it down, a lot of it is poetry. And all great songs stem from good poetry. I'm a true believer in that. And this is a great example. But don't forget that it is the drops of water that feed the hollow of the streams. If the streams can find the sea, maybe we'll find the light. There's such a beauty in her words, especially in that stanza there and so many others. I thought it was. I can definitely see the sirens, and it's had the "I'm not a sailor," and it talks about the shore. So I could definitely see where you're going, and it definitely had that hollowing kind of music. And I kind of like that haunting kind of feel. Even with, like, love songs, I just like that. I love that haunting. I don't know why. It just sounds beautiful. Really well done. Excellent SoundCloud. And sweet, to your comment, did you know that Stand By Me, the novel with a different name?
What was the novel's name?
It was The Body.
The Body. You know, I did know that. In the back of my head, I did know that. But I didn't know until,
like,
you said
you
it
get
until,
put on
like,
a
it came rolling
and
out.
You lose
yeah.
all.
I do, and I didn't know that.
Oh, I swear to God, I know it. I just can't think of it right now. I have this to you all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as you said it, I'm like, yeah, I knew that. I knew that little trivia a long time ago. Everybody say hello to Deb.
Hello, Deb.
Deb, did you get to hear Naomi sing to us?
I did. Wow. I second what Sky was saying about the you have to be brave to put yourself out there and sing, and it's always surprising how much more often the poets that share with us sing. It's awesome, truly. And like right from the very, very get-go, if your heart aches, if you can't laugh anymore, if you don't know how cheerful like before, if the circle has left, if you could not follow it, come on over, babe. And then as I was listening, I thought that this was definitely for someone specific, because say down towards the bottom, I'll have some rum for you. I'm not a sailor. I live far from the shore, but maybe together we'll find our way there. But to specifically have rum for that person, so it insinuates that there's knowledge to the person. And you can feel love in there, but caution. And I do agree. I think Rack said that it was a bit haunting, and it was. There was a, I guess for lack of a better thought at the moment, like a sea shanty tucked in with a love song, tucked in with a little help from my friend, all kinds of stuff. All wrapped together, and I wish her a lot of luck in the contest. I just realized that it was for a contest, so fantastic job.
And Amadeus loves your song, too, just FYI.
I thought that was
Deb, do you know the
making sure that
song,
got the comment.
Yeah, me too. I'm so happy. We love to talk.
One of our infamous co-hosts.
Do you know the sea shanty song, Deb?
Show me the way to go home. I'm tired. I don't want to go to bed.
Yeah.
Probably not. just saying. I mean, I can picture, or not picture, but like in my mind I had these vague recollections of different pieces and stuff like that, but off the top of my head, I don't know any. Popeye songs.
Well, no, there's a new song called Sea Shanty. I'm going to send it to you. And it's funny that you said that because you're haunting me. I've been driving my niece to school every day for 2 weeks. And picking her up, rather, not driving her to. And we have to listen to it every single day on the ride home.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you figured you'd share your misery, is that it?
She still didn't get that cupcake.
What?
Nah,
cupcake?
I didn't either. Shut up, rack and tour.
Nobody gets cupcakes until I get cupcakes. All right, I'm going to go ahead and do our next audio so that we can get as many or get all my audios in. And then we will do a couple of live poems. Let me check this. Oh, wait. Hold on. I've got Lady A on the phone. Hello, Lady A.
Hello. I thought you forgot about
me.
How
are you? No, I did not. I did not forget about you. I was sitting on another phone.
That's what you are.
I brought you something for this evening.
Good.
I will put it in the room for you.
Well, don't put it in the room yet. Put it in the other room.
Yes, the other room.
The other board.
Where you have topic board.
Yeah. Right.
For when you're
ready. You know the game. I don't know what I'm talking about. I know. All right. So my other one is from Shelley Burden. If I'm screwing up your name, you must call and yell at me because that's the best way. That's definitely the best way to do it for me. Let me show you an odd board. There you are. Everybody get excited. This is like her first time on my show, so I'm like really uber excited to have her and listen to her. So happy. Blocked up radio studio. And here we go. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, Hillary. I really admire your brilliance. You are teaching me resilience. Your mind was made to impress. I relate to everything you express. Reading you is music to my ears, healing those turbulent years. The powerful energy you exude makes me check my own attitude. You're divine in your poetic delivery. Your words are my mental auxiliary. End poem.
Wow. I love this. I really admire your brilliance. You're teaching me resilience. Well, let me say, I love the poem. I love the, and my dog, Amadeus, who's right now being a big pain. But anyway, I love this poem because of your rhyme, the cadence, your words, and the way it goes to the prompt you chose. So the prompt you chose, the quote by Stephen King, was you cannot hope to sweep someone away with the force of your writing until it has been done to you. And that is true. Your words are my mental auxiliary because I cannot tell you how many times I've been swept away by someone's poems or the way they speak, the way they their tone, their read. You have an excellent voice. Oh, my God, I can listen to that. And the way you read your words and kind of bring you into that, I really enjoyed that. Feeling those turbulent years, excellent. Well, thank you for writing for my show. Hope you continue. Love to hear your voice sometime. Come join us. Let's start with Deb. Your thoughts on this?
Well, for starters, I love her voice and how she pronounces the words. She's got a beautiful accent to her speech. And from the very beginning, I really admire your brilliance. You are teaching me resilience. And I thought, that's awesome. Now I want to see whether, because, you know, right there it could be, I admire your brilliance, and then that resilience, is it because of something you did that I pushed back from, or is it something you did that I learned from? So I wait and see. your mind is made to impress, and I relate to everything you express. So then I realized that it's total admiration for the person. And I want to leave minds because, well, for one, Sky will yell at me, but I do want other people to be able to comment. But I like that it is a complete tribute to someone with a lot of total admiration mixed with her beautiful voice. It was an awesome brevity. And it's so cool. Like, you know, I love when we have new people at the shows, and I agree, sweet. Keep them coming. It's a couple now for Shelley, so that's really, really cool.
Yeah, and Ragnar, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the person that she admires could very well be Stephen King. I mean, I think he's a writer, right? you know, but in terms of, you know, like you say, just the content of what she's saying, you know, you could tell that there's an admiration there for that person. You know, I really like the way that she said what she says, and like you mentioned, sweet, that the cadence was great, the read was brilliant. It was a great little poem.
Well, I thought this was really quite lovely, and if I may comment a little bit on what Rack had said with regard to the person of interest in this poem. She says in her author's notes, "I was very inspired by other poets, other people's work, when I joined All Poetry, which led to these earlier poems that I have edited as I felt it suited the prompt for this quote of Stephen King's." And so I thought that was really interesting, that I think I really admire your brilliance. You are teaching me resilience. And I think she's speaking of all the poets that she's read since she's been on here on this site, and how the body of work for each of them has inspired her to write this piece. And I thought that was really great. It was I'm quite impressed with that. Well done.
Excellent. And Sky, your thoughts, please.
Oh, yes. I love this one. It does make me, I did read her author's notes to see that it was, who it was inspired or who inspired her. And I think that the write itself is brilliant. It was a brevity that clearly states thankfulness and admiration, and how poets do kind of have to be resilient. For most poets, it's not all in glory. It's just expressing yourself going on. And sometimes people are harsh, and sometimes we are harsh, and we are our own worst critics, and yet we keep putting it out there. So I do love that as well. And I do like the fact that she said, which inspired me to go back and rewrite this poem and edit it and go forward. And, you know, I've always believed that a piece of poetry is a work in progress. There is no end, really. You could be happy with it, but perhaps in a few years you might look at it, because we all grow as writers and we all learn, and you might want to change a bit. I do that on my pieces sometimes. If it's a very old one and it's more like an emotional piece, I try not to cut, you know, to do too much to it, because I want to keep the essentials to it. But there's definitely ones that I've reworked several times. I always keep the drafts, and I always keep the original. But I think that the ability to do that, the ability to look at your work and to say, okay, well, I learned a few things here and there, and I think I'm going to put this and this and that, I think that shows, shows an aspect of a poet that knows that they've grown. And I think personally, even me, I can relate to this, because I've grown a lot on AP. I joined, I think it's think it's almost 10 years ago or 9 years ago. And my writing went from writing personal emotional pieces just for me to cope to some pieces that were written for, like, writing classes and things like that. But more so growing as a poet and writing in different facets. So I think this is an excellent tribute. I thought it was brilliantly done. And, yeah, really well done. Any comment?
Absolutely. Any comment? Any comments? A very lovely comment, detailed and quite categorized, and, you know, the teacher's done her job. All right. So, Miss Deborah Lee, how about I throw you up indeed?
That would be awesome, but don't throw me too hard.
I won't throw you too hard.
Oh, you will it.
All right. All right, let's see. Bom, bom, boom. Let's go to Deborah Lee. I'm kind of looking forward to this one, Deb.
Hello.
Yes. Oh, you already put yourself up there. I'm, like, going through it. You're already there.
No, that was no. Actually, what I put up there was your show link because Naomi asked for it. But
link.
It's all good because I'm about to push send it, and it'll be there. Ah, you beat me.
Okay. It's already there.
That was your show link, not mine.
There we go. I look at it again. Okay, there you go.
Okie dokie. So the one I wrote to is the trust of the innocent is the liar's most useful tool. And here we go. It's called When Trust is the Tool, Leading to the Gateway to Pain. Flashing wild cherry lollipop grins, liars prey on babies, painting fairy tale pictures that dry in invisible watercolors. Salt drips on wounds and droplets. They burn to patches of red, just as quartz sunshine fries and rainbows till it blurs. Sandcastles crumble, flattening in tide tsunami, then periwinkle blue balloon strings snap floating out of view. Latex pieces burst and fall in the oceans, gagging the rock lobsters and whales as the colored chunks poison seawater, too. Liars in webs of sugar-coated lies, snagging kids like fishnets just to trap giggles, drop-kicking storybook tales with steel-toed boots. But not all bruises are purple, blacks, and blues. Scarfed cars inside sprout rage from the roots. The children weep locked in the closet skeletons, stockpiling all the fat lips, every black eye and all the broken bones, storing them in boxes on the shelves. They tally up the wounds on scorecards, crouching in the darkness, blueprinting payback. And talking to themselves. Little boys snap squirrels' necks and laugh. Teen girls trade pom-poms for shadowed corners. Bloody killers fall into the shady crevices, stalking from neighborhood houses, spying on kids sobbing for lost lullabies and candy-coated blinders. Popping the cork of the bottled-up rage, their knife blades swing, slashing and maiming, badgering and bludgeoning predators from yesterday, slicing flesh from bones without aiming. Adrenaline invades arteries in every vein, fueling the piercing stabs and thick gashes, but then, for that buzz, they strike again and again. Now, as the once prey turns into the predator, this full circle of agony drives the tally of pain, breeding the next generation of rage. Can the pattern of devastation ever end? End poem. And my disclaimer is that I know that every single person who's been a victim of one type of abuse or another does not turn out to be an abuser. And I applaud them, and I admire their strength. and I think that they're awesome, but there are those that are driven to devastating darkness, and those are the ones I was speaking of. End poem.
Wow. That's devastating and great. Amazing. Let me find my favorite line, because there's so many. You know, you have this. Okay, Brackenshire, give me a minute. Let me get this done, and then I'll have to do that.
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay. Okay. Put it in the room, and then Deb, when we're done with yours, if you could put Rax in the studio for me, I would appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I have this little thing that I always do, and I do it a lot with a lot of poets, but I've done it a couple times with you, but this one really works. And it's the first line of every stanza. Flashing wild cherry pop grins, salt drips on wounds and droplets, sandcastles crumble, latex pieces burst and fall on oceans, fire spin webs of sugar coat lies, but not all bruises are purple, black, and blues. Children's weep, locked in closet skeletons. They tally up the wounds on scorecards. Little boys snap squirrel necks and laugh. Teenage girls trade pom-poms for shattered corners. Bloody killers fall into shady crevices, popping the corks off the bottled up rage. Adrenaline invades arteries in every vein. Now, as they once prey, turns into the predator. Can the pattern of devastation ever end? And every line of the first stanza make their own poem. And that always fascinates me when a poet can do that. When they can have a poem within a poem. And this one fascinates me that way, because it's such a powerful punch of what you're saying. And just that imagery alone kind of gave me the chills. And I find that, I can't say any more than that, that just your first lines of every stanza is a poem within itself that is enough to give me the chills. It's very, very well done. Thank you, Deb. And,
thank you, sweet. Awesome comment. And if you refresh your studio, you will find Rack and Tor in there.
Okay. Lady A, your thoughts?
Well, I thought that this was entirely sad, you know, right from the beginning. Flashing wild cherry lollipop grins, liars prey on babies, painting fairy tale pictures that dry in invisible watercolors. I mean, that says it all in that first verse right from the get-go. And, you know, you talk about the salt dripping in the wounds, and they burn, and, you know, the sandcastles have crumbled. It's like this child was robbed of its innocence had they survived, you know, whatever happened to them type of thing, if they didn't die. But, I mean, I think that it's really liars spin webs of sugar-coated lies, snagging kids like fishnets just to trap giggles. Like, and there are people out there that do that, and they gain the trust and at the same time destroy any trust that a kid would have. I thought this was brutally honest and, you know, dark, you know, when you think about kids that grew up like that, and you've got an example of little boys snap squirrels' necks and then they laugh, you know, and that happens all too often with the violence that's out there today. But I thought this was a very, very informative and you know, to remind us that these things are taking place every day, and which makes my skin crawl. It's a really sad state of affairs that we've come to this point. And hopefully, whatever's happening, in the world today is a lesson for us to be kinder, I guess. I keep hoping and hanging on to that. And you said it all by saying, can the pattern of devastation ever end? Very, very well written, Deb.
Thank you so much. Awesome comment. Sorry for the siren.
Everybody say hello to Wayne.
I'm on a speakerphone tonight because I blew my headset up and I messed my phone up trying to get my Fitbit to work. So I got everything all screwed up, so I'm on a speakerphone. Need my programming.
My Fitbit laughs at me.
Glad you're here.
You got to be here.
Oh, great. Thank you, Wayne. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here, but I sure did have a long time getting here. I've been trying for 3 hours to fix my headset and my other stuff. I got all screwed up,
aww,
so I finally called in on the phone. Yeah, I messed it up big time.
No worries. No big deal. I'm just glad you're here. All right. And, Sky, your thoughts?
This piece was beautifully written. I think it's very hard to write about subjects such as these, and I think a lot of people shy away from those rights or shy away from sharing those rights or talking about these things because they're hard to talk about, but it's really important to talk about and to share that these things are happening in homes more often than people would ever realize. And I think your words are, there's a lot of truth in them, that it is very difficult to stop a cycle of violence. And, you know, there are children that are, they talk, you know, say preconditioned, nature over nurture. There's so many aspects that really bring into this where you talk about the violent child mirroring learned behavior. And not giving those appropriate filters to express themselves. And I think that, you know, these types of things have to be done a certain way, or it just doesn't work. It doesn't feel honest or genuine. It just feels like a story that someone could have just told. But the way that you wrote it, I think, that you do touch on a very real aspect in speaking of abuse and those cycles of abuse. And I think it was Lady A who said you don't shy away from those darker things, those very real things. It's quite easy to, you know, put metaphor and put things in a lighter fashion, and a lot harder to deal with the raw and the real of it. And I think you do both quite a lot of justice. So very well done.
Thank you so much, Sky.
Excellent.
Great comments.
And Raconteur, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is something that you could easily talk about all night long. When it comes to abuse, the emotions wrapped around it, which you touch on beautifully, setting aside the why the person even acts that way, you know, that leads to sort of the cycle of violence that you talk about. But even if you set that aside, it's the end result of, you know, the takeaway of the person that was abused. Some people are fortunate enough to kind of recognize it and not only get away from it, but, you know, use it in the other thought of, you know, treat other people the way that you want to be treated. You know, you recognize that this is something that you don't want to mimic. It brings to mind that thing that always comes up when you're getting yelled at by someone, when you're in an argument. They never fail. Oh, you're just like so-and-so. And when you say that to someone that was abused, that's like the worst thing you could tell them. The flashbacks of the abuse, the shame, the knowledge that person never wants to be like that. That's the worst thing you could yell at someone. But, you know, it tends to be like one of the defense mechanisms that people tend to pull out. It's one of those really flashpoint things that you know, you mention it and it brings about a million different emotions. So you did a great job talking about it, Deb, and, you know, in your own beautiful way, you know, and which is, I won't say mocking, but, you know, I guess it makes it more poignant, you know, even though it's a dark subject, you know, you don't shy away from it. You shouldn't shy away from it. And maybe that'll make it more memorable for some people and get a little more attention. Beautiful piece.
Thank you so much, Raconteur.
All right. I'm going to read next, and then, Deb, if you can stick around, I was going to have you read In Chains.
Perfect.
And then we'll do Rack. Okay. So up next is Innocent Eyes by Sweetie. Hopefully everyone enjoys my lovely piece. I wrote to The Trust of the Innocents is the Liar's Most Useful Tool, a quote by Stephen King. Burnt hair and old urine memories of an afternoon linger on his skin. Soap and water can't scrub away his sin. Lies told again to innocent eyes, tears uncrystallized. Gun in hand, blood dries from fingertips. Wrist wrapped, ankles bond, skin ripped. Another high, rushes home, kisses on sweet lips. Secret places, barbed wire, fish hooks, decorated dolls. Legs, arm, torso, and face. He owns her body. Dinner time, say the prayer, eat the broccoli. Body carcass carved upon the floor. He feels no overwhelming joy. Giggles explode as he plans to play with his toy. Flesh on flesh, sweat drips, and she sighs. Knife in hand, ivory skin splits into crimson tide. Innocent eyes cry. Final tears crystallize. End poem.
Wow, sweet. Talk about rendering a group full of people speechless. From your very first line, the burnt hair and old urine memories of an afternoon. There's almost nothing as bad as the smell of burning hair. So between that and the urine, you start us off with this vivid, even almost smell-o-vision kind of thing happening. And it really sets the tone. And then you slam us with blood dries and fingertips, wrist wrapped. Secret places, barbed wire, fish hooks, decorated dolly, legs, arms, torso, and face. He owns her body. Dinner time, say the prayer, eat the broccoli. And it's like all these horrifying things, and then, okay, now say your prayer, eat your food. Wow. I'm kind of... I'm nearly speechless from just that part, to go right from tragedy to how dare you even speak the words, say the prayers. At that point, the person receiving must be having a really hard time finding a place to pray to, because faith gets pretty hard with all that horrifying stuff. But then eat your broccoli. So sweet, this was just like, this was contrast. This was, I could feel a hypocrite in the middle of there. I could feel the tragedy. I could feel my heart breaking for the innocent eyes that cry final tears crystallized. This is an extremely powerful, emotional poem. Talk about nailing the prompt. Hell of a read, sweet.
Thank you.
You want to say hi to Hatter before I get you some more comments?
Hi, Hatter.
Hey. Checking in.
Hey, Bobby. Checking in.
Hatter, did you hear Sweet's poem?
Not the prior thing. No.
Okay, no, I just wanted to check since you just got here. So let me get her some comments. And how about if we start with Wayne?
His poems, I read your poem a while ago and reading it, hers. Y'all got some dark poetry tonight. It's a lot darker. I thought I was bringing something that was too dark, and I think y'all beat me in every one of them. This is a great poem. It's about as dark as Stephen King can get. I like the way you strung all your words together, like wrist wrapped, ankle bond, skin rips, legs, arm, torso, and face. He owns the body. Linger on skin, soap, water, can't scrub away the sin. You know, you ever put it around, you got just kind of kept driving the point home. It's dark. It's a good written poem, and I like it a lot. Did a good job with this.
Thank you, Wayne.
Welcome.
Awesome comment, Wayne. And how about Sky?
Oh, you guys are ripping my soul apart tonight. This quote, you know, in relation to this. You guys are. It's true. Oh, my God. You know, this piece, for one, when you talk about, you know, burnt hair and old urine memory, you know, there's a lot of weight in the fact that that children who are abused at a young age often wet the bed far later than normal or quote-unquote normal, what you would be, even into their teens, because of the trauma that they've experienced when they were younger. And some even go into a kind of a safe mechanism with abuse, such as, I think, is what the poem is saying, as in creating a very dirty space for themselves, very unkempt, as to not want to attract certain attention. And I think this piece speaks so loudly on those levels. And again, because of the way that it was written and because of the way that it was worded, it to me, it does speak of that more abuse that is in home by the hands of those who are supposed to care and who are supposed to trust. And yet there is the victimized child. And then when you go down to, I guess you would say, because someone else feels as if they own the body, a lot of people resort to self-harm because that is the only way they feel control of their body. There are so many things in this piece that hit on so many levels, deep levels, and I think you did an excellent job writing it and putting it on the page and giving it a voice. Really well done.
Thank you, Sky, very much.
Awesome comment. Yeah. And Rick?
Yeah, the opening line, I think, is simply brilliant. Burnt hair and urine-stained memories. Just the idea of burnt hair, you could take that like, you know, oh, I hope she's talking about, you know, dolls, you know, just because sometimes, you know, children destroy their toys or whatever, or they torture each other by, you know, they pull the heads off the dolls. And maybe she's talking, but then, you know, the memory, not the memory, but the realization that, you know, well, there's hair on someone's arms or on the back of their neck. You know, hair is all over the body, so maybe not. And the urine-stained memories, like Sky mentioned, it could be wetting the bed. It could just be, you know, a dirty environment, you know, an unclean feeling. That there's so many ways that you could wrap that around. Your mind wants to escape and not accept what you're really talking about. So you kind of give us an out, but not really. And then, you know, you really pile it on as you go down further. And then when you get to the saying your prayers, it's like speaks to me of the attitude of the people being the abuse. And, you know, more often than not, that they, it's not that they feel justified, it's that they don't recognize that they're doing anything wrong. And you know, the holier than thou, like, you know, attitude that some of them have about, you know, this is going to hurt you more than it does me thought sometimes when it's, you know, supposed to be like a punishment and it's not even thought of as abuse, or, you know, when it's outright abuse, but, you know, you know, you should be happy that you even, you know, have this opportunity. I mean, you really, really beat us up mentally with this piece. It's brilliant. It's really brilliant.
Thank you.
Hell of a comment. And last comment goes to Lady A, please.
Well, I'll read you what I wrote. Your courage just to write this piece is amazing. You speak the truth with bravery, and I so admire you. This was such a painful write, and you talk about the nuances and the tiny bits of things that somebody might not even notice, you know, blood drying on fingertips, but, you know, barbed wire and fish hooks and decorated dolly legs and arms and torso and face, he owns her body. Dinner time, say the prayer, eat the broccoli, you know, it reminded me a little bit of that movie, who was in that movie? I think Nolte and Prince of Tides, where there's a scene where these criminals break into this family's home and rape the mother and the children, boys and girls alike. And the little girls afterwards, nobody was, they were all sworn to secrecy, and the little girl sitting at the dinner table with her dress on inside out and backwards. And we're taught that, you know, abuse comes in many forms. Child abuse in this form is like the worst. And, but, you know, growing up in my house, we had violence in our house, and we were sworn to secrecy. And it was a terrible thing to hold all that and try to hold all that inside, those secrets. And didn't do a very good job, and thankfully I didn't, because it saved my life. But this piece here is just so painful to read, and to know that this kind of stuff goes on is just beyond belief. Anyways, I'm sending you about a million hugs.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Awesome comments, everybody.
Correct. Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, so up on the board right now, I've got In Chains poem. I'm going to have that read by Deb, and then Rax can be up, and then we're going to have Sky, Lady A, and Wayne. So.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, you beautiful.
All right. Well, this poem was written through the prompt, "The place where you made your stand never mattered, only that you were there and still on your feet." And it's called "Where Hope Remains" by In Chains. Here we go. I look at the stunning view, a sunny landscape of wildflowers in those lonely hours, rain showers and the lullaby breeze as still tides drench the fins of colorful fishes upon golden seashores. This rocky cliff top I stand upon, covered in lily of the valley shrubs, fragrant goldenrod and pale pink, silky buttercups. Behind me a tall silver cedar tree with brown porcelain like limbs swaying left to right. Its crisp leaves fall to earth, soil so gently. End poem.
Oh, how beautiful. Behind me, a tall silver cedar tree with brown porcelain like moon swaying left to right. Its crisp leaves fall the earth so gently. You know, I love In Chains. I just do. I love the way she writes. Lonely hours, rain showers, and a lullaby breeze. There's a rhyme in here that I love.
Yes.
It shows.
Okay.
I love how she talks. It's like almost like the leaves are kind of committing their own suicide in here. She talks just standing there, you know, being a part of the world, being a part of who she is. The sunny landscape of wildflowers in those lonely hours, as still tides drench the fins, colors, fishes upon golden seashores. I just think this is really beautiful. You know, just like looking over the world and seeing how beautiful it is, even though people may say other things. You just see the beauty in all of this. I think it's gorgeous, Joe. I think it's absolutely stunning. And Hatter, since I know you love to talk about Joe.
I love the fact that she's eased up on her cryptic metaphors, her abstract. The storyline is a lot clearer, and she does it well. This is very good.
And Deb, your thoughts, you read it?
Yeah, you know, I felt a softer side of Joe as I was reading for her in this one. And you start with the title, Where Hope Remains. And it's really nice to feel the hope in her words as she was reading. For example, that cliff top. This rocky cliff top I stand upon, covered in lily of the valley shrubs and fragrant goldenrods and pale pink silky buttercups. It's like you could inhale the floral scent. It was uplifting. It was, she wasn't standing there contemplating jumping off the cliff. She was in, there was hope, there was faith, there was joy that remained. And I love that. I absolutely love the gentle, softer side. Don't get me wrong, I totally enjoy her brilliant darkness in abstract, but I really, really could feel that softness here and kind of like that too. And it was an honor to read for her.
And Rackentor, your thoughts?
I think this is beautiful. You know, again, like everyone's saying, they're used to her writing darker. So I think it's funny that Deb, you know, automatically went, you know, oh, I'm glad she's not jumping off the cliff. Because I saw a lot of the beauty that she gave us in what she writes. And that's something she does so well. Even when she is talking about darkness, she really can describe something in a very visceral way, you know, and you end up smelling it and feeling it and thinking about it in a very not overwhelming, but just a relatable way. She really has a way of capturing something, her subject matter that she's talking about. And, you know, she's talking about, you know, the tree and the falling leaves and the things. And when you combine that with the thought of the quote, it's, you know, there is a lot of hope in what she's talking about. And, you know, I think we tend to shade what we read based on some of our impressions. And sometimes, you know, that does the poet a disservice. But, you know, I think she did a wonderful job with this lighter, darker, however you want to try and interpret it. It was just, you know, there was a beautiful sense of hope in it and, you know, a strength and you know, the talent of her eloquence shown beautifully in this.
Thank you. And Sky, your thoughts?
Oh, I said next one. I've always been a fan. I greatly enjoy what I call her Palladian sexton type writing, confessional writing. And this is also wonderfully done. And I've seen a few pieces like this that she lends a little bit more to nature. And I think the duality is quite brilliant. I love how this one does speak of hope, especially when, you know, autumn is often seen as a time of death and a time of change,
renewal.
Obviously the season, the renewal. That's what I was getting there, Rack. Don't worry. Death, change, and renewal. But the renewal comes in spring, really. I think the renewal is quite into the spring, but autumn often gets a bad rep to having those fallen leaves, to seeing those sadder memories fade. And I think she does it quite well here when she says, behind me a tall silver cedar tree with brown porcelain-like limbs swaying left to right. Its crisp leaves fall to the earth, soil so gently. Because even with those falling leaves, the tree is still standing. So that come spring, not autumn. Come spring, there might be a regrowth again. That's what you get for interrupting me. But come spring, there will be a regrowth because the tree is still standing. It's still there. It's still making its last stand. And for someone who's read The Stand a few times, I do enjoy that book. Very long book. A very long book, but I very much do enjoy it. I think she does this quote quite a lot of justice, especially in reflective to the piece of work that it references. So very well done.
Right. And Wayne, your thoughts?
Yes. Oh, man. This brings back a lot of emotion to me because Simply Joe was one of the first I met her for the first time on the site, and she's one of the first people I pissed off on the site. So, I mean, her went around for a lot of years, and I love her. And I was like, this is great, and loves great descriptions, and written in a touching manner. And I haven't read a poem by I didn't change if any less dark than this, and it's hard to believe. But I like what she said. Behind me, a tall silver cedar tree with brown porcelain-like limbs swaying left to right. Its crisp leaves fall to earth, so gently. It's lovely. She did a great job in this. It's amazing. And now here we are all dark tonight, and she's a light. And after 4 years, all she had was dark, and everybody was kind of on the light side of her. So she did a flip here somewhere or another. But this is a great poem by her, and I love it.
And Lady A's last comment, and then we're going to play Rack.
I think that I read her poem the last time when she had one submitted, and I found it's changed since her very, very abstract time that she wrote in. And I think that this is a little more not conventional, because she's certainly not a conventional writer, but I thought that this was one of her just, you know, how can I say this? Like, she was so abstract that it was very difficult at times to understand what she was trying to say. And when she explained, she would explain them to me, and then you could see it in the writing what she was trying to say. And this is like, I can read this and understand by reading it. And so she's kind of allowed herself to come away from the abstract. And maybe she was, hiding her true self behind the abstract because people perhaps didn't understand like they could have understood. And I think she's come to a place where she's content maybe with her writing and her thought processes and her, it's just her interpretation of whatever prompts perhaps she's looking at or reading. I just thought that this was a lovely piece. This rocky clifftop I stand upon, covered in lily of the valley, shrubs, fragrant goldenrods, and pale pink silky buttercups. Like, I love that. I love that she's able to come back to that kind of writing where you're just, you're not so much trying to decipher what she's saying as much as you're enjoying what she's saying in this piece.
Absolutely. All right. Rack, you are on the board, I believe, as I just lost all poetry, and Blog Talk Radio. So let me get back to that. I'll log back into there so I can turn you on. Well, your SoundCloud anyway. I'm not going there. It's not Sunday. Mm-hmm. All right. Come on. Hopefully you're on the board. I apologize, guys. All right. Rack and tour, rack and tour, rack and tour. Back down here. And, all right. I think everybody should see Rack. And here we go.
Pickup Artist by Raconteur.
She never saw it coming, and I almost felt guilty. What chance did any woman have with a sociopath like me? Bold move, hopping in the car with a stranger, but there wasn't a hint of fear in her eyes. Flashing a perfect smile as her tight skirt rode up her pale thighs. Where to? I asked, driving off into the night. She said, I would love to find some place to grab a quick bite. The moon looked on, chaperoning our quest. She fidgeted nervously with the buttons, adorning the blouse, straining to cover her chest. Distracted, I swerved, almost crashing the car. Pull over behind that barn, she said. In the shadows, our tongues can spar. Eagerly, I raced. Not a moment did I waste. Her intentions clearly were not chaste, and I could not wait to have a taste. Her eyes locked on mine, she boldly made the first move, unbuckling my pants hastily as if she had something to prove. I was having too much fun, so I didn't mind the delay. In the throes of passion, she would be easy to slay. When her lips met my thigh, I let down my guard. She pierced my femoral artery with her fangs without trying very hard. I tried to struggle, but only managed a pathetic wail. Clearly, she had done this before, and I had no chance to prevail. Drained like a juice box, she left my body there to rot. It seems I had bitten off more than I could chew, picking up one of Salem's lot. End poem.
Well, there you go. Bold move hopping in the car with a stranger. There wasn't a hint of fear in her eyes. I would love to take you, find a place to grab a quick bite. There you go. Nothing. I love strange you like a juice box. That was funny. Those straws are really hard to poke in there. Picking up one of Salem's lot. This is really a great poem. I love how you played it with the Stephen King. I thought it was hilarious. I think it's funny. I love the innuendos throughout. And that's what you get. It's never easy. Just remember that. It's never easy. If it's too good to be true, you're going to end up dead. Sky, your thoughts on this?
I thought it was clever. Did you know it's really called Jerusalem's Lot?
You know, I agonized over that.
I did not know that.
Huh? Well, it's called Salem's Lot, but in the book, it's called Salem's Lot, but in the book, it's actually called Jerusalem's Lot. But I love the nod. I love the nod to the book. I'm so happy you put it in there. I was quite thrilled. I was like, oh, that is clever. This whole piece is clever, and it reminds me why nobody should get in cars with strangers, and you don't pick up strangers on the side of the road. You just go home and live your life by yourself, and no one will get hurt. And it's cruel, but it's true. There's too many psychos out there, and I think this is quite clever. And I love. I know. And drained like a juice box.
Yeah, that's the line I did.
That is the line. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was quite a clever analogy. I thought that was quite good. This is a very you know, Salem's Lot wasn't my favorite King book, to tell you. I kind of had to make myself admit that. I don't know why, because I love vampires. I love Anne Rice. I love vampires, but there was something about that book. I love Stephen King. But there was just something about that book. It was a little hard for me to get through. But I love your rendition of this little fun tale of draining people like a juice box. That's going to stay with me. Great piece. That's going to stay with me, definitely.
And Lady A, your thoughts?
you know, they're getting creepier and creepier as we're reading them. And I've never read an Anne Rice. I've never read a Stephen King. All those books, those movies, I cannot watch. And it's late at night, dark out, and they're getting, like, quite spooky. And it makes me wonder what their minds are really. Like, you know, there was one quote Stephen King said something about being a murderer. If you're, like, you know, you wonder to be able to think these kind of wicked things up if they're really part of that in their secret life, you know. But it was certainly well written and food for thought and quite scary in a way, you know. Because I'm a big chicken when it comes to stuff like that.
Well, I'd certainly rather eat chicken than...
What did you say, Rex?
I'd rather eat chicken than bite someone on their neck, so...
Well, it was really good, and actually that part of it really surprised me. I wasn't expecting that at all. And I thought that was quite brilliant, actually. But guys are really... you guys got some scary minds.
I was waiting to get yelled at to get yourself talking.
No, it was really good. It was really well written, but it's just a little, like I said, it's just getting a little too dark for me, and I think I need to go to bed.
Well. But if you're up at the sky, so you can go to bed for sleep and ponder your thoughts.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear anything that you said.
I said, I'm not going to comment, and then it's sky, and then you're up after sky, so you can go to bed in a few minutes.
Oh, okay.
Ponder your thoughts. Okay. Wayne, your thoughts.
Yes, this is, I like what's to drain like a juice box, let my body there to rot. That says it all. You got two horny little sociopath perverts and ran across each other, and the guy was thinking about what he could do too long, and so the girl took advantage of him a little bit and made the first move, and he made left him laying there to rot. That's great. That's a great little scenario you got there, Rack. I like it a whole lot, and it's a good little story. He said that, like the guy described, just thought about doing it too long, and the woman beat him to the punch. You can't think about something, you just got to go ahead and do the deed. Great job with this.
I love that. All right. So next, we're going to have Sky. And a little Sky up there.
Okay.
All right, Sky, you're up.
I wrote you. Don't worry, Lady Eight. No one's getting murdered in my home. Kind of.
Okay.
Besides. But thoughts and memories are being murdered. Anyway, so this is called Love. This is the quote, love isn't soft like those poets say. Love has teeth which bite and the wounds never close. So this goes like this. Those chuffing chambers and musical frets by Sky Darkholm. I wrote you into phonetics, bits of paper picnics and floral sun with black ink and death ink. And when thoughts were more on page than shadowed on fingers, like remnants I dare not speak, I crumpled lines and rattling letters. I carry them gathered under November's cloak, the watchful eye of skeleton branches, the honey locust in early winter, those faint yellow gleams that hinge like tawny bands laid to rot on fingers. I made way to Graven Hills, where gramophone sat aloof, the wailing chambers and musical frets that grip the heart. And like the coal of engines, I tossed those leaves into wells. I wound its lever, the mechanics of engine trains, chuffing a dreary furnace of vapor dreams. You were rendered to phantom, ash that rests on cheek, the gray flakes of thoughts burned alive. Not to be buried, I found, to my dismay, rather to be worn like a second skin, to haunt all my days.
Oh, I love the way you write a love poem. I just don't know how you make them so beautiful and haunting and heartbreaking all at the same time. The wailing chambers and the musical fret stick to the heart, and like the coal of an engine, I toss the leaves to the world. I love that. I love lines and rattling letters. What a beautiful, I don't know, metaphor. I love letters and rattling letters. And I love the other one I really, really like. Ash that rests on cheeks of the great flakes of thought. I mean, that's, you know, like burned thoughts, rests on cheeks of great flakes of thought. I really like that. Burned alive, not to be buried, I found to my dismay. Because God loves something that, you know, I don't know what it is, just walk around. Not very to haunt all my day. This is the stunning stuff, as always. The haunting depth of feeling that is just right there, locked on your shoulders. I really enjoyed this. Wayne, stop, my dear.
Did you say Wayne?
Thank you, sweet.
You're welcome.
I think you did a wonderful job on this poem here. You didn't put your evil out on the page with ink and then turn it to the graven hill to talk about how the deed would be with ash on your face. You didn't play real when you said, rather be worn like a second skin to hold all my days. That's a great way to end it. And it's very, very well written, poetically written, and I like the way you read it. Good job.
Thank you, Wayne.
And Hatter, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, guys. I loved how you started it. I loved how you... Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. How you started, I wrote you into phonetics. That's a great line. I wrote you into phonetics. Got me right off the... Had me right there. And I wanted this to rhyme so bad.
Thank you, Hatter.
You're welcome.
And Lady A, your thoughts?
Well, I thought this was beautiful. I like that opening line as well. Bits of paper picnics and floral suns. With black ink, a death ink. You talked about, I mean, I could speak to every couplet in here, the shadow on fingers that remain, remnants I dare not speak, crumped lines and rattling letters. It's quite dark, but it's beautifully written. The watchful eye of skeleton branches, the honey locust in early winter. And you can feel that coldness. I've made way to the graven hill where gramophone sat aloof. The whole thing was sad. I'm just looking for the other couple of lines that I was... I guess it's more towards the end. You were rendered to phantoms, ash that rests on cheeks, the gray flakes of thought burned alive. Not to be buried, I found my own destiny, rather to be worn like a second skin to haunt all my days, like Wowzer. That's quite a poem.
Thank you, Lady A.
Wow.
I think as writers, we all have that, we write about what we love. And when we're in love, we write
we write love after love, and then afterwards, what do you have left? But things that are painful to read. So what do?
Yeah.
You burn them up, or do you save them, or do you read them? And then, you know, so.
I wrote to that same prompt when it was put out, that same exact picture.
I love that picture. I hope you don't mind. I stole it.
No, I don't mind. I don't own it anyway. I just used it myself, so not to worry.
And Rock and Core, your last words before I throw up 88.
Yeah, I love the way you wrote this. It brings to mind some of the etymology of the expressions that we use sometimes, because, you know, you've got skeleton branches and burning memories and wearing someone like a second skin. You know, how these expressions come out, you know, you use them, you know, rightly so, because they're metaphors, but to see them in context, it makes you think about how, you know, these expressions came to be. You know, when you see them in action, when you see them used the way that you do, and it really enforces the thoughts, you know, like they're supposed to, in the way that they're supposed to. So, you know, it's beautiful to read. And yeah, it's got teeth, all right. I could kind of see the bite marks. I mean, you know, it's relatable, because, you know, everyone's got a past and all of that. So I really appreciate the words, the way that you present them, and the whole piece in general. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rick. And I'm sorry. Wait, did I get comments from you? Did I miss you?
Yes, you did. I've already commented.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We're up and ready to go.
Okay, this is called One Word Resonate, and I picked the quote from Stephen King, alone. Yes, that's the key word, the most awful word in the English tongue. Murder doesn't hold a candle to it, and hell is only a poor synonym. Stephen King. The room is full of people, talking, laughing, engaged in conversation. Music plays, your favorite song. Some dance, some sing along. Toasts made with smiling faces, handshakes, and warm embraces. Food on fancy plates and bowls, an abundance as the night unfolds. Women flirt with willing men, a touch, a smile, a kiss, and then, arm in arm, they leave the scene, proclaim the party best in theme. Room swirls round and round, dizzy, faint, one word resonates. It screams, a silent scream, no one hears, it seems. One word, though in a crowd, alone, screams so loud. End poem.
Wow. If there was ever a poem to go with that quote, this would have to be. World rooms swirl round and round, as you faint, one world resonates. It screams a silent scream, no one hears it seems. One word, the in crowd, alone, screams so loud. I really like the way you put this poem through, with all the little nuances of some dance, some sing, toast, smiling faces. It's like all whirling around in a head and a mind, and you know, that whole adage of, I stand in a room with people and scream and no one hears me. And,
yeah.
And that's what I see here. And it's got such a depth of darkness and sadness, and it's like, you know, the wallflower, you know, why am I not seen? Why am I not heard? Why am I not something here? And for every wallflower that doesn't see, think they're not seeing, our thousand eyes to see them. And it's really, you know, choose to be seen, choose to understand those that love you, and choose to understand those that you see. Don't seek out the blind eyes that don't want, that
don't seek the blind people that can't see, but seek those that see you. I really understand that the sadness in this, but wow, this is really deep and kind of darker than I think anybody else has written, because there's such a reality for those that feel alone. Brilliant piece. Rack, your thoughts.
Yeah, that's the words, unfortunately, relatable, have to come out for this one. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things, you know. I the expression, I guess, surrounded yet alone, it speaks to all of that. And, you know, we've all, I'm sure, been there, you know, and it makes you feel like nothing. It makes it, feelings and emotions that surround that are all wrapped up in this. And you know, it's really scarier than any kind of vampire story, because, you know, your mind can kind of write away, you know, things like that. But, you know, being in a room with someone that you know very well and you know, kind of being ignored as if you're not even there hurts way more than getting bit in the neck and drained of all your blood, I think. At least I imagine it would be. That's not something I guess you could readily compare, but, you know, it's just one of those things. And you know, it's very, very relatable, Lady A. And, you know, it's you did a great job writing to that quote.
Thank you.
And Sky, your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought this piece was brilliantly done. And it speaks so much of how people, you know, in those crowded spaces, in those crowded rooms, how even in the midst of all those people laughing, talking, music going around, food, and all these things happening, how someone can still feel so very alone. And this could be happen at the market. It could be you go down to the grocery store, and you're surrounded by so many people, and yet, again, you're still so very alone. And there's quite a devastation in that, especially when even in daily life, even when in the company of others, they're not really seeing you, and you're not really feeling as if you're seen. As if you don't quite matter. And I think that something at some point or another that many people can relate to, and yet we take it to ourselves so individually on different levels. You know, you can't know somebody else's pain, even if you've experiences like it, if you know what I mean. And I think that we all should think about that when we're just walking by people, and it's so easy just to ignore people and just to go about your day in your own world, because everybody's got their own problems. But it's much harder to look at the person who's crossing the street next to you and think about, well, what are they going through as well? Should I give them a smile or a hi or a wave? To make them feel not so alone. And it's such a small thing to do that it doesn't happen as often as it should. Really well done.
Okay. Wayne?
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. Wayne, if you want to comment, and then you are up next to read.
Yes. It's a great poem. Talks about being alone at a party, because when you're at a party and you don't fit in, and there's everybody where you go and everybody you talk to, you just don't quite accept you, and you can't fit into their conversations, you get this weird feeling about you where you just wonder what's wrong with you. And then as you leave, you go see, think, man, I'm all by myself, and nobody cares about me, and they're in their own little world, and get in your car, and you've got as many questions going through your head. All you want to do is somebody to relate to you. It's a community of a bad feeling, an empty sense that nobody can explain, and you can't wait to find somebody that'll talk to you that enjoys your company. It's a great poem there. It's a great little dark poem, really. I like it a lot.
Thank you so much.
Now, stick around for this little dark poem right here. It's pretty a little dark, but it's you know, Stephen King, when he writes, it ain't that he kills people, that it makes you feel the pain before he kills you. He's like, he wants you to know, be in their shoes, you feel exactly what he's doing to you when he's killing you. So I brought this little one around that this little poem over kind of what he writes, and it's called Dark Hatred. It goes like this. My eyes burn with desire to kill. Your guts will rip out and spill. Your spirit has no reason to be alive. You're only good for maggots to survive. As I remove your limbs, I lust to see the pain feel. Tip your skin to the bones. Keep you alive still. Hell hath no purpose for your disgusting soul. Earth has no place with a big enough hole. Pierce piece by piece, rid the world with a knife. Skies will close as the end comes to your life. Your inner being be rejected by some. Only filth left when the end of life has come. I would dance as the rats devour your brain. The hatred I feel has driven me insane. To laugh is what I'll do as you scream. Your soul death is the only thing I dream. Yeah.
Well, first off, I love the fact that you kept count, that there's 133 twist and dark words. That's awesome.
Yes.
Only still left with the end of life has come. I will dance as the rats devour your brain, and hatred I feel has driven me insane. To that is what I'll do as you scream. Your slow death is the only thing I dream. I love that last stanza. It's like a little party going on in a psycho's mind. I dance and scream as I dream. I think that's great. Oh, my God. This is just perfect and twisted and so right for Stephen King night. This is very good, Wayne. I think you nailed it straight from the heart of the king. Beautifully done. Very, very good. Rackentor, your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I like when Wayne goes a little nuts. this is beautiful, Wayne. I still say we should party.
Yes, we should.
I'm not going to any of your parties, you guys. You're all murdering people.
I murdered several people. I ain't killed you yet. I'm getting ready to.
It's not a party. Y'all paranoid, wondering if I was next.
Yeah, Lady A. It's not party you need to worry about with Lady A. With Wayne. It's camping.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the barbecues you don't want to go to. We can go to his parties, but can't go to his barbecues.
And why not?
He just killed me off last week. He threw me off the cliff after a camping trip in one of his homes.
Okay.
And he has a thing for barbecue. And apparently he barbecued sweet peas. Yeah. We don't go to his barbecues. There's a problem with him in the woods, the fire. We don't go, no. Just don't go in the woods with Wayne. It's very simple. I know.
Lady A'd be so sweet.
Don't go there.
See, Wayne and I would have a different kind of camping trip, I think.
I don't know.
I said I would have a different kind of camping trip, Wayne.
I'm going to take you on a trip and show you what it's like.
You're going to what?
Take you on a trip for Halloween. That's what I'm going to do.
I hate Halloween, Wayne.
Uh-huh. Okay, back to the poetry.
Did you
get
her on air?
Hey,
scary stuff.
What do you think of Wayne? Wayne, what did you think of Wayne's poem?
Well, his murder is in it, and I thought it was really well written. Ow. Sorry, you guys. I can't talk right now. I'm going to put myself on mute.
Okay. Rackentor, what did you think of Wayne's poem?
I still like it.
Okay, then, Sky, your thoughts.
He's a bit wild, Wayne. This is an excellent piece. I like when you start killing everybody. I don't know why. But this is what I really like too, right here. Your inner being be rejected by scum, and then you bring in, I will dance as the rats devour your brain. The hatred I feel has driven me insane. And hate can make us do many things. But this is this right here. To laugh is what I do as you scream. You're not just letting hate consume you. or the reader, the writer, the pen, but you are reveling in it with laughter and menacing just chaos. Very well done.
The pain is what matters.
All right. Guy, I am going to have you read Budo.
All right. This is, are you ready?
Yes.
All right. So this is Broken by Budo. Where I am guided by luminescence, you embrace the antithesis of my reality, corrupted by wrenched slags of rupture. When I speak in candor and ethics, you critique cruel gestures, a wry smile seeping from incarnation, evil bliss. In your ignorable pleasure, I am strung up, spread eagle, pleading for clemency while you disembowel my core essence. Pointed fingers, skillfully slicing with scalpel, sifting through gruel matter in the hopes of retrieving untruth and life blood, leaving my remains exposed to the elements, to unjust manipulation, bleeding profusely without cauterization, interjecting words on a swollen tongue, dismembered from your consequence and praying malice. I discern the gravity of mortality in your realm, knowing full well that if I remain, your destructive grasp of my faculties will slowly erode precious light of my being, neuroticizing every fiber, killing me from within until I ebb away existence into the nether. End poem.
I gotta tell you, I really like this poem, but what really scares me, other than the deep and the depth and the darkness, since you and Sky and Dan wrote to the same poem about, you know, love not being soft and wonderful like poets say it is, but having teeth and bites. This is an actual breakup poem that he wrote to a human being. So I never, ever want to get on to this unhappy side. So, yeah, this is just brilliant. I can't say enough about it. I've already told him how much I love his poem. So, Guy, you read it. What do you think?
I love this poem. I really, really loved reading it out loud. Such an honor to read for you, Budo. I hope I did it justice. This piece just sinks into your soul, leaving my remains exposed to the elements, to unjust manipulation, bleeding profusely without cauterization. And love does feel like that after it leaves us, after we feel it's, as you say here, it's manipulation. And it's, you know, that hollow that remains, that feeling that we're just bleeding out and we're just exposed to all those insecurities of the world and from that our heart gives, and that there's no Band-Aid for it. There's no wrapping around and saying, all right, you know, buck her up, go ahead and go back out there. It does feel sometimes that you feel your own mortality, as in the metaphor of do we after the quote unquote death of a great love or a love that we've enveloped ourselves in, how do we move on from that? How do we open ourselves up again, especially when we feel that we're nothing but bone? I thought this was really, really well done. I love the way that it was written also.
And what are your thoughts on this one?
Okay.
Oh, did you say Hatter?
Hatter, I think she's off.
I didn't hear what it said.
Wait, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, my thoughts. Voodoo's done gone dark, and I might say a little sick, too. To be disemboweled is so bad that I can't even write about that. I'm hurting for the way his destructive grasp of my facilities. That'd make a person not, someone not want to live. And it hurts thinking about it. It's a great poem, and you're killing me from within, Budo. Great job.
Absolutely. And Hatter, you around?
Yeah, I love the way Bud writes. When I speak from candor and ethics to critique cruel gestures, cool line.
All right.
Yeah.
So we have
that's the
time one more moment
that you feel completely drained out of emotion after reading something like that. Just sucked it right out of you,
isn't it?
No. Brilliant.
Well, I have one more piece to drain everyone, and that's Hatter's. So.
Okay.
Hatter.
This is about fear, right? I mean, King was good at that.
Yes. Yes.
Come on, boy. I'll find it.
I got it. It's on the board.
Okay, thank you.
Well, it's supposed to be on the board.
Refresh. No, nothing.
No, it's not coming. Oh, my computer just totally froze. Hold on.
Maybe I still have it. I got it. Should we go down?
All right.
There it is.
All right.
It's called Beast. I wrote it to just fear. There's a story of in India where these tigers, these Siberian tigers, had started preying on man and the villagers, and it took it would come in and take whoever it wanted, and basically well, they had to hear it. They heard the sounds of feeding. To me, that's one of the biggest fears is they couldn't sleep at night. I mean, these tigers, how are you going to stop a 600-pound freaking cat comes in and is hungry? So I read to that. The closest thing was the monsters are real, ghosts are real too. Sometimes they win. It was like this. The grim reality of the future is none. We could only survive by hiding from the sun. The nightlife was different in the years gone by. No taverns, no nightclubs, nothing to get you high. Hunted every time the sun goes down, knowing the killers are always around. The dark sounds of feeding fills the air, crushing bones, breaking sounds we cannot bear. Beast of the darkness, hidden from view, strangling its dinner, knowing it could be you. The sun going down brings the fear inside. Waiting for the beast, I cried. Wear heavy clothing, you get stuck in their teeth. Bathe in the swamp water, the beast won't eat. For our horror, it was wrong. The swamp he liked, dipping sauce was stagnant. He dipped every bite. That night of fear, I stood my ground, knowing the beast makes no sound. The attack was quick. He pounced from the trees. Taken was a child older than three. A call was heard, the beast is here. Arrows were shot, throwing long spears. The beast was hit, dropping his kill. We cornered the tiger, we killed at will. Again it happened, we don't understand. Every decade it's repeated, the killer of man. Before another 10 years go by, I will grow my wings and learn to fly. The world's so crazy, you might die tonight, learning to sleep with one eye tight. Today I napped with no weapons in hand. I dreamed, don't scare me in it. My dreams don't scare me, and I hope you understand how easy you have it in caves with beds. Remember these words that I have said. Your fears are real, these monsters in the night, and I don't have an ending to this yet.
Yeah,
as far as I got.
I like when you do that. But I
thought
I'd
it was worth finishing.
I like today I nap with no weapon in my hand. My dreams don't scare me, and I hope you understand How easy you have it in a cave with beds. Remember these words, what I have said. Your feels are real, these monsters in the night. I really like this. And I like when you bring poems that aren't done, because that just means we get to read them later. This is really pretty fearful. I can't imagine what it'd be like to be stalked by a tiger or a lion or a bear.
Oh,
but then again, that's how...
Yeah, know, every night.
Yeah, but that's how we became...
Yeah, they were saying,
that's how we started, you know? I mean, that's how we all started. That's how we became man in the first place. They all were all, you know, we were their food for the longest of times. How we figured it out, turned it around anyway. And then we became so dominant, and now it's kind of like the reverse, isn't it? Where they're like, hey, wait a minute. It's our turn to figure out how to take back some of our land because you've taken too much of it.
It's like dogs chasing chickens. Once they start, they kill a chicken. Once they start, it's hard to stop a dog once they start killing birds. So the same kind of thing. And when that incident, I can't remember what year it was, but the village hired tiger hunters come in and kill these tigers. There was more than one that had gone rogue, and they were feeding like every night. They would grab somebody out of the huts and buildings and drag them off. There's nothing to stop them. So they brought these lion hunters in to get rid of them, and they eventually did. But it's quite a story.
I like
Thank
it.
You for
I can't
read it.
To finish it. Oh, not a problem. I really enjoyed it. Sky, your thoughts?
I just tried to get some fear, so you can fear the fear. I got that quite right.
I'm fearing fear of the dipping sock, so stagnant, just dipped every bite. I'm feeling the fear. This is why we stay home. Don't go out. Lock the doors.
Yeah.
Don't go out visiting other places. Yeah, don't go out visiting other places that have tents or anything like that. You just stay locked up in your house all day long. Don't really.
I agree. No one
goes really, anywhere. I thought it much. I like the story too. You know, I like when people bring like this story here. Stories and fables and I was actually just watching something, and one of the quotes was, every story has to come from somewhere, and they were talking about the science behind the myths and about legends and about, you know, there has to be a stem of truth to kind of bring into fruition a story as of such. So and something like this reminds me of that, because it reminds me of a creature, a beast, you know, coming into the village, and then perhaps people expounding upon it and creating myths and legends and stories as well. I thought you did a really great job.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Here, kitty.
How good do we have it? Nobody's hunting us. You know, that would be, we still had saber-toothed tigers around or something.
Kitty. Oh, if they bring back the dinosaurs, we might.
Clone the Megalodon. Or the Mastodon. Mastodon. I want to see that.
I think they're already doing stuff.
Oh, that'd be
fun. Too.
They're thinking about it.
That.
I'm sure somebody's thought it. Yeah, they've got DNA from a Mastodon, and they want to put it in an elephant.
I was reading some of that, yeah.
I'll take a Mastodon, brother.
Dear kitty.
Yeah. It'd be like the Flintstones when they go to the intro, when they drive to the drive-in, they get a rack of ribs. It's the car of this.
On the Flintstones?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thanks for letting me read it.
Is Sweet Pea still here?
Yeah, Sweet's still here.
Huh.
Sweet's getting ready to say goodnight. No, Deb's gone. I want to thank everybody for a wonderful show. You guys have been awesome tonight. It's been a great show.
Comment? Debbie, comment on better.
Oh, yes, Wayne, go ahead. Comment on your critters.
Because he's so right about this, about these tigers and cats. You know, I live near a couple Asian families, and they still across the way, and then they can be out in their little gardens working, and they'll see a little house cat just creeping along across the field, and they get scared. They back into their houses, and this little house cat will scare them to death. Because in their world, a cat is something that sneaks up on you. You don't see it before it's too late, and they just grab you and rip you apart, and you know, let your kids get eaten over and stuff, just to be lewd about it. So there's a deep interference with Southeast Asians about tigers, and I see it in their eyes when they just see a little house cat. They can see house cats. They just scared the hell out of them. So you're right about the big points.
Yeah. Yeah, they take you with one swipe to break your back.
Yep.
Just ask Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's right. You heard me say it.
Okay.
I thank you. Thank you all very much. I had a great time. You guys rock. Thank you for joining me. Can't do this without you. I will be out of here for the next couple of weeks. You guys have a great time. I'll miss you very much. I'll see you back after Halloween. Party on, everybody.
Should you write my poem before you leave, ma'am?
I will write your poem before I leave, okay? I've got like five poems,
right.
Six poems to write before I leave. Love you all. I will see you back in November.
Well, Little Red Riding Hood better be on there.
Well, Little Red Riding Hood, I will be on shows the rest of this week and part of next week, but my last show as far as Thursday nights until November will be tonight. All right.
Well, I need a SoundCloud then.
I'll see you guys
Bye.
Later. I will. Bye, guys.
Little Red.
Good night.
Thank you for using Ross.